word is about. There's something evolving. Whatever may come, the world keeps revolving. They say the next big thing is here, that the revolution's near. But to me it seems quite clear that it's all just a little bit of history repeating.
All right, we made it to a Friday night. It is Nicole Sandler here on Air America Radio, and I got to talk fast because we are jam-packed tonight. I got a letter, actually old-fashioned snail mail, a letter from a listener named Larry Wartels, and the letter is signed Larry Volunteer, Leonard Peltier, Defense Committee, Canada. And basically, he implored me. He said, "Dear Ms. Sandler, do you have an opportunity on Air America Radio to give some visibility to Leonard Peltier's case before the July 28th hearing? He's been in prison 34 years, falsely convicted of murder." Well, I didn't get to it before the hearing, but the hearing took place on Tuesday, and here we go tonight. Today, I got a hold of Leonard Peltier's attorney, Eric Seitz, and, here's our conversation. I guess we should start at the beginning because even though he's been in jail for 33 years, there are a lot of people who don't know who he is. They may have heard his name, but they don't know the story. Can you bring us up to date on what happened?
Leonard was an American Indian Movement activist. He and a number of his colleagues went to the Pine Ridge Reservation in 1975, where there was literally a war going on between the traditional Native Americans who were fighting for their rights and for their survival against the United States government and the Indian Bureau of Indian Affairs and the local tribal leadership, all of which had been armed and supported by police and FBI and BIA agents. And there had been a whole series of murders on the reservation. There were more murders on the reservation per capita than any place in the United States, including Detroit in those days, which was known as Murder City. And so this group of Native American activists went there. They were encamped on private property, and a couple of FBI agents came onto the property in June of 1975, and there was a shootout that took place. The two FBI agents, on the one hand, were shooting at a group of Indians that was comprised of about 25 individuals. And the two FBI agents were seriously wounded. One of the Native American activists was killed. And then apparently, according to the evidence that was adduced later at the trials, somebody went down to the location where the two FBI agents had been wounded and fired additional shots that killed them. In the aftermath, the FBI brought in a whole force of people, somewhere around 350 people or more, and launched a massive investigation and search. And that ultimately resulted in four people being indicted for the murder of the two FBI agents. One of those individuals, Jimmy Eagle, was cut loose because he wasn't even there. Two of the individuals, Dino Butler and Bob Robidoux, went on trial in federal court in a case that was moved to Cedar Rapids, Iowa, away from the prejudice in the area immediately adjacent to the reservation. Leonard Peltier, the other person indicted, had escaped to Canada and was fighting extradition. Robidoux and Butler were acquitted by a jury in their federal court trial on the grounds that they had acted in self-defense in simply shooting back at the agents who had invaded the private property in the environment where basically all of the Native Americans feared for their lives because of what had been happening there on the reservation. In the aftermath of that trial, the FBI decided that they were going to have to hold somebody responsible for the deaths of these two agents. And so they decided that when Leonard Peltier was extradited back to the United States, they did not want to risk another acquittal. So they did several things. The first thing they did was they literally concocted, and this is not debated, three affidavits from a woman by the name of Myrtle Poorbear, who claimed that she was Leonard Peltier's girlfriend and that he had admitted and that she knew that he had executed the two agents by firing the fatal bullets at close range. Those affidavits were presented to Canadian authorities, and it was on the basis of those affidavits, each of which is internally inconsistent, each of which is a lie, that Canada extradited Leonard to the United States. Then at Leonard's trial, they didn't call Myrtle Poorbear because everybody knew that she wasn't there and that she was incompetent mentally. And so they, at trial, launched upon a new strategy, which was to show that Leonard fired the fatal bullets by introducing ballistics evidence that purportedly tied a gun that Leonard had to the casing that was found at the scene of the shooting where the agents died. It later turned out that casing had been examined by the FBI, and the FBI specialist in the laboratory had been unable to match it to the gun which the FBI claimed that Leonard Peltier had. But the government conveniently did not turn over those early test results, and eventually, armed with that ballistics evidence, Leonard was convicted in a trial that occurred not in Iowa, but also was shifted back to what they call Indian country, in this case in Fargo, North Dakota, before a judge who was notoriously biased against Native Americans. So Leonard was convicted based upon that evidence, and he ended up serving all this time since then, and is still in prison.
Eric Seitz is with us. He is one of Leonard Peltier's attorneys. So the parole hearing was held earlier this week, and it was his first parole hearing in 15 years. Why such a long span of time between parole hearings?
Well, because of the nature of the convictions, the shootings of two FBI agents, Leonard was also sentenced to consecutive terms, two murder terms, and then he early on attempted to escape, so he had added on a third sentence for escape. As a consequence of those sentences, he had three consecutive sentences which he had to serve, and each of the murder counts carries a 15-year mandatory minimum sentence, and the escape 3 years. So prior to this, when Leonard appeared before the parole board, there was an argument that he should not have been sentenced to consecutive sentences. However, the parole board refused to accept that, so that by virtue of their rulings, he only became eligible for parole after having served the full 33 years.
Oh, man. Okay. Well, now let me back up and say there are so many people who believe unequivocally that Leonard Peltier is innocent. Why is everyone so convinced that he is not guilty?
Well, once the ballistics evidence was found to be unreliable, on which the jury had convicted him, the government at that point somewhat gratuitously said, we can't prove that he fired the fatal shots, but it's admitted that Leonard was there and then he fired his gun at the two agents, so therefore he was an aider and abettor at a minimum. The problem with that argument is that the two people who'd been tried as aiders and abettors in a separate case had been acquitted because of self-defense. But Leonard was never given a trial where he could assert that defense. In his trial, basically, the situation was somewhat different because he was charged as a shooter and they had ironclad ballistics evidence, according to the jury. So Leonard should have been given a retrial on that issue, but he's never been able to obtain that.
Why not?
He also really, well, the Court of Appeals said, basically, and there are some serious contradictions between one opinion and the next, but in the series of several opinions, the Court of Appeals basically said that even though they don't believe that he was the shooter who fired the fatal bullets, they will uphold the conviction because there was enough evidence on which he could have been convicted as an aider and abettor, although that wasn't the theory of trial. So we've been unable to set that aside, nor have we been able to get the courts to reassess Leonard's sentence, because if he was only an aider and abettor, he would have had concurrent rather than consecutive sentences, and he would have been eligible for parole a long time ago. So he's been treated horribly in this situation with serious errors that were committed by the FBI, serious misconduct by the government during the course of the proceedings. And those are the issues which have been very troubling to people over the course of this history of this case.
We are speaking with Eric Seitz. He is one of Leonard Peltier's attorneys. I found him. I tracked him down. He is on vacation. He was driving up the East Coast towards Maine and talking to me on the phone late this afternoon. We'll take a break now. Come back with the second part of my interview with Leonard Peltier's attorney, Eric Seitz, on Air America Radio. Don't go away.
Nicole Sandler.
You're listening to Nicole Sandler on Air America Radio. Nicole Sandler.
You're listening to Nicole Sandler.
This is a song by Little Steven called Leonard Peltier, and the list of Leonard Peltier supporters in the arts, in among people, everyone from musicians like Little Steven and the Indigo Girls to Bishop Desmond Tutu have come out in support of Leonard Peltier. I'm on the phone with speaking with Eric Seitz, one of Leonard Peltier's attorneys. What happened at the parole hearing this week? Do you think they're taking all of this into account?
I think they are taking it into account. The hearing officer who conducted the hearing on numerous occasions made reference to the fact that this is not a typical case and that they know that Leonard has many, many influential and thoughtful people who have expressed concerns about not only his conviction but his continuing incarceration. So I would expect the parole commission to take all of that into account in determining whether or not they're going to grant or deny parole. Of course, the FBI is adamant. If you kill an FBI agent, that's it. You know, you've got to spend the rest of your time in prison and you throw away the key and you never should be given parole. But that's not what the state of the law is. And many, many people who are very thoughtful about this process have expressed their views to the parole commission. We had some very powerful testimony and many letters, and we're hopeful that that will have an influence, especially at this time where the political climate has changed, where Leonard is one of a very small group of people who are still in prison from the period in the 60s and 70s when there are a lot of political cases that were brought. And at this point in time, he served far more than he should have, and we're hopeful that that will all be taken into consideration.
Eric Seitz with us. He is one of Leonard Peltier's attorneys. Now, I know there was some criticism of President Bill Clinton for not pardoning Leonard at the end of his term. I don't think anyone would expect George Bush to do it. But how long have you been working with Leonard Peltier? Were you around back during the Clinton days?
I've been working on this case since 1989. And, yes, I was very involved in the negotiations with the White House. I was personally involved in all of the negotiations, which led to an agreement by which President Clinton promised to grant clemency to Leonard Peltier. And we had an understanding that if we were to do certain things to provide what basically would be described as political cover, in other words, support for President Clinton when he made that action, that he would certainly grant clemency and Leonard should have been released from prison before Clinton left office. On literally the night before he went home, Clinton reneged on that agreement, and we were all stunned. You might also know that David Geffen, who was one of our major supporters in that effort and was a big fundraiser for the Clintons, refused to support Hillary Clinton as a consequence of what happened with that clemency effort, and through his support and the support of a number of people in Hollywood to President Obama. So that whole decision, that whole history, had an impact, I think, significantly on the last presidential election, and we're hopeful that President Obama and the people around him remember that, so that if we're not able to get parole for Leonard, that we'll have some better opportunity to get clemency down the road.
Now, a president doesn't issue clemency until the end of their term, although they can do it at any time. Have there been any discussions with anybody in the Obama administration about this?
there have been approaches made. There are a lot of contacts with this administration. Because of Leonard's health issues, that would be a reason for them to act, and they do act. Presidents have acted under circumstances like this, where somebody is older, where there are good reasons to believe that his health is deteriorating, and he may not ever get out of prison alive. So we are certainly going to make those approaches. Once the parole commission acts, if the parole commission grants parole, then, of course, that will resolve the matter. If the parole commission does not grant parole, at that point we have an option of taking the matter to federal court, and we'll have to decide at that point whether that's something we want to do or whether we would rather pursue clemency with the administration. But we'll have to see at that time.
All right, and one final question. So the hearing was earlier this week. You said you would get something in 24 to 48 hours and then the final ruling in about 3 weeks. What was supposed to come this week?
The hearing officer who conducted the hearing is supposed to make his recommendations within, as he told us, 24 to 48 hours, and he promised that he would do that. He did not promise that he would provide us with a copy of his recommendations, and there was some uncertainty as to whether we're entitled to get it at this stage or down the road when the full commission makes a decision. As of today, I still have not received anything from the hearing officer, so my understanding is, and my assumption is, that he went back and he checked with the lawyers for the parole commission, and they must have advised him to withhold any circulation of his recommendations until the full commission acts. But the full commission is required to act within 21 days upon their receipt of the hearing officer's recommendations, and we anticipate, therefore, that that will happen by mid-August.
All right. That is Eric Seitz. He is one of the main attorneys for Leonard Peltier. If you want to help out, I'm going to post on my blog the address for the U.S. Parole Commission and their phone number and all the information you need. I should have already had it up there, but I will do it during the break, so it will be there. Just go to radioornot.com. Give me a couple of minutes, and I'll get it up for you. On the other side of the break, we'll speak with Harvey Wasserman of freepress.org, who's written extensively about Peltier, and we'll talk to him for more on Leonard Peltier. We'll be right back.
Nicole Sandler.
You're listening to Nicole Sandler on Air America Radio.
You're listening to Nicole Sandler on Air America Radio.
We got the cool girls fire. We got the liars by the fire. And the FBI, they lie in court and get nailed. Leonard Peltier goes on.
See, Avon, the Indigo Girls, they're singing about Leonard Peltier and the song Bury My Heart at Wounded Knee. It's Nicole Sandler back with you on Air America Radio. And as we continue telling the story of Leonard Peltier, I wanted to call on Harvey Wasserman, who is a longtime activist. He has written numerous books and lots of articles, mostly at freepress.org, that get printed elsewhere. He wrote a piece just the other day that was picked up also by Huffington Post. I've got it linked from my blog. It's called How Leonard Peltier Could Leave Prison by August 18th. And, boy, I'm sure a lot of people are hoping that that does happen. Harvey Wasserman, thanks for joining us tonight on Air America. So tell us, how could Leonard leave jail by August 18th?
Well, there has to be a decision from the Federal Parole Commission by August 18th. They had a hearing on July 28th with Leonard and his attorney, Peter Matheson, testified, the author, a woman from Leonard's hometown, where he will go, God willing, if he gets paroled, Cynthia Malaterre, and Dr. Thomas Fassett of the United Methodist Church. They all testified in front of a hearing officer for the Federal Parole Commission, which is required now to render a decision within 21 days of the hearing. So that would be August 18th, and we are hoping that Leonard Peltier will finally be paroled. I think just to put things in perspective, Leonard has been in prison for 33 years, which is 6 years longer than Nelson Mandela was in prison.
Wow. It is stunning when you think about it. In the last half hour, I had a conversation with one of his attorneys, Eric Seitz, who, I caught him in the car driving up to Maine. But he was kind enough to really tell us the whole story, the whole saga, everything that Leonard went through and what his arrest was about and how he was wrongly convicted. Now, what is your involvement? You've been writing about Leonard Peltier for quite a while now.
Well, I do anti-nuclear work. I'm an environmental activist and also write U.S. history and teach U.S. history. I've got a couple of history books on the United States. And, of course, the history of the Native Americans is at the core of our national story, and the mistreatment, the maltreatment, the terrible things that have been done to the Native American people are an essential part, unfortunately, of the European invasion of North America, and for 500 years, since 1492, it's been a very ugly story, and Leonard Peltier's story is part of that, and we're hoping that with his release, which we hope will come soon, that at least the healing can begin between the U.S. government and the Native American community. It's certainly long overdue.
Absolutely. Now, Harvey Wasserman, you've been around many in the music world for a long time. You were you helped in the formation of Muse, Musicians United for Safe Energy. They gave us the No Nukes concert. So, I've done events when I was doing music radio in Los Angeles with Bonnie Raitt and Jackson Browne and the Indigo Girls, who are all involved in, Native American causes as well. So many people in the arts community have come out in support of Leonard Peltier. In fact, in the next segment, I'm going to air an interview I recorded earlier today with Bruce Coburn, who's one of my favorite singer-songwriters, who's also been speaking out in favor of Leonard Peltier. What kind of nerve did he touch? Why has he moved so many people to get involved?
Well, he's really conducted himself in 30 years in prison in a remarkable way. I mean, he's tremendous integrity and perseverance and grace under fire. He hasn't gone bitter. He hasn't started talking about, blowing people up, blowing up buildings, anything like mm-hmm. that. He's quite the opposite. He's been very, very even-handed and eloquent in his speeches and his writings that have gotten through the prison filter. And so, he's been a very inspiring character, and he is at the core right now of how people feel that Native America must be recompensed and redeemed in the way it's been treated over the past 500 years. And this unjust imprisonment of Leonard Peltier is just staggering. And to again mention Nelson Mandela, Mandela was finally released with global pressure. He became president of the country that had locked him up and ushered in the end of apartheid. And we're hoping that with Leonard's release, and we are encouraging people to write the Federal Parole Commission. Their address is online, and write the Federal Parole Commission as quickly as you can and tell them that you want Leonard released, because
yes, and in fact,
this
I just
have impact, and being on radio shows like yours also makes a difference. People have to call your senators, your congresspeople, the White House, and exert all kinds of pressure to get Leonard released.
Definitely, and I posted the address and the phone number for the U.S. Parole Commission on my blog. It's there at radioornot.com. It's there alongside of the documentary that Robert Redford produced and narrated, Incident at Ogallala. So
yes, and I just watched that. You can watch it online, and I just watched it last night, and it's a staggering piece of work.
It is.
Just really terrifying in its way that a man with so little evidence, zero evidence really to convict, winds up in prison for 33 years. It's a terrible miscarriage of justice, and getting him out is also a necessary rehabilitation for our criminal justice system, wrongly called so in this case, because there's been no justice here. But anybody who thinks they're secure in their human rights in this country needs to see an incident in Oglava and understand how bad the conviction of Leonard Peltier really is.
You got that right. Again, and I've got the video embedded in my blog at radioornot.com, along with a link to your piece, How Leonard Peltier Could Leave Prison by August 18th, and all the contact information for the U.S. Parole Commission. So, I guess the best thing we can do right now is just get the word out and let people know that this is a crucial time for him, and we need to make our voices heard, and hopefully justice, however delayed, will be served.
Yes, well, it's incredibly important that he be released for all of us. You know, it's a cloud that hangs over the whole country. It hangs over certainly the activist community, of which Leonard is such an important part. And it hangs over the justice system. If they can get away with putting a man in prison like this, they can imprison anybody on any pretense. And we really have to defeat that in this. And so people don't sit around and pray and meditate. Send a letter to the Correction Commission. Call your representative. Call your congressperson, your senator, the local newspapers, the radio shows. And we only have, 20 or less than 21 days now to get him out.
Right. Okay. So there's your marching orders. Herbie Wasserman, it is always great to talk to you. Thanks for joining me tonight and staying up late to do so.
Well, I hope our next conversation will be celebrating Leonard's release.
That would be great. You've got a date. We will talk.
Okay,
as soon as
thank you very much, and take care.
Thank you. All right. Harvey Wasserman, you can find him at harveywasserman.com. He writes a lot at freepress.org. And check out his book, Solartopia. It is great stuff. All right. One postscript. We're going to take a break, come back on the other side, and talk to one of the many artists who is speaking out publicly in support of Leonard Peltier. That's Bruce Cockburn. If you're not familiar with him, you need to be. It's Cockburn. It's spelled Cockburn, but it's pronounced Cockburn. Also, we're going to end the show, just looking ahead an hour. I've got a friend. His name is Noah Gray. He's a 16-year-old, going to be a senior in high school, and he is a great documentarian, and he's spending most of the summer in Washington, D.C., working on some projects. And he, in front of the White House, has noticed these people there every day while he's been there, out there protesting. And one of the things they're protesting is, they're trying to call attention to Leonard Peltier. So Noah put together a little piece. We'll close the show with it tonight. But stand by. Coming up next, Bruce Cockburn. Don't go away.
Nicole Sandler.
You're listening to Nicole Sandler on Air America Radio. Nicole Sandler.
You're listening to Nicole Sandler.
The music that's playing now is a song called Stolen Land. It's from a wonderful singer-songwriter named Bruce Cockburn. He is a Canadian artist, and if you might know the song Wondering Where the Lions Are. I've been a fan of his for probably 30 years, which is about how old Wondering Where the Lions Are is. And I noticed in some of the literature as I was doing my research on Leonard Peltier, his name was there among the multitudes of artists who are speaking out on behalf of Leonard Peltier. And I got a hold of Bruce Cockburn today, who was also on vacation, and he broke into his vacation and agreed to take a phone call and talk about Leonard Peltier with me. What got you involved in Leonard's case?
Well, I was just becoming aware of Native issues, for want of a better way to put it, in the 70s when the original or the second round of Wounded Knee happened, the events that led to Leonard's arrest. And, I had a number of Native friends in Canada and who were watching that situation unfold very closely. And Leonard, of course, when it became apparent that he was being sought by the FBI, fled to Canada. And the U.S. government came to the Canadian government and asked for his extradition using what turned out to be completely specious information. Our government, to our great shame, bought it and sent him back to the States, where he was tried in a trial that was pretty close to a kangaroo court, and sentenced to,
two life sentences.
Yeah. Well, one for each of the officers murdered.
Right.
But he was said to have been seen fleeing from the scene. That was the big piece of damning evidence that I recall. I'm not the best authority on this case. I'm sure there's a lot of information around it that I don't possess, but what I recall was that somebody said, oh, yeah, we saw Leonard Peltier running away from the scene. But I was at that scene subsequently, much later, in South Dakota, and stood where the FBI agents had parked and looked at the spot where Leonard Peltier was alleged to have been seen running. And you couldn't identify anyone at that distance. It was like a half a mile away across a field in the rain. And, I mean, you could identify a jacket maybe or something big, but it was ludicrous to think that testimony was considered credible. And then there were a whole bunch of other things contributed to it. seemed vengeful. It seemed to, in keeping with the whole thing that followed the events at Wounded Knee, it's a sort of complicated story. I don't know how much of it it's appropriate for me to relate at this moment, but there was a confrontation between the American Indian Movement, of which Leonard Felcher was a part, and the power structure on the Rosebud Pine Ridge Reserve. And the power structure was basically kept itself in power by means of threats and goon squad action. And after it was over, when the occupation of the trading post at Wounded Knee by the American Indian Movement was finally dispersed by the FBI, there was a campaign of systematic, basically murder of the leaders of the opposition on the reserve. I became acquainted with the family of one guy who was murdered, and you may be familiar with John Trudell.
Mm-hmm. Oh, sure.
He was part of that whole scene and paid a terrible price. His family was murdered subsequently, and his wife and children were murdered and in their sleep while he was away. And this campaign followed people around. It didn't just limit itself to the immediate area. It was, you know, because I think Trudell's family was in somewhere in the Southwest when this happened. But it seemed to me that Leonard Felcher's situation was part of that whole scenario of vengeance based on, well, first of all, on what had been a general policy of suppression of dissident groups like the Black Panthers and the American Indian Movement and various other groups during the 60s and early 70s by sort of covert side of American justice. Hence, a combination of that and obviously the desire for revenge on the part of fellow officers of the guys who got killed and the racism evident in the governing circles and at the time and in the Dakotas. All of this conspired and put Leonard in jail, and there he sits.
Yeah, he sits. It's been 33 years now he's been in jail, and he maintains his innocence, and the list of supporters is growing. And like I said, what interests me so much is the support among the arts community. I mean, there's you, there's Ani DeFranco, Robert Redford, Robbie Robertson, who has gotten very close with him apparently, and all these songs that have been written. Tell us about Stolen Land.
Well, Stolen Land makes a reference to the Wounded Knee events. Anna May, who was mentioned in the beginning of the song, was someone who was murdered in the period immediately following the Wounded Knee occupation. And she was a Canadian-born person from Nova Scotia, Anna May Aquash, who was involved in the siege of Wounded Knee, and who, I don't know the whole story around her death, but she was found in a ditch somewhat later on, and recently, actually, in the last year or two, somebody was called to account for her murder. But it's not clear to me that the person who was called to account was the person who did it. It might be, but that figures in the song. It's Stolen Land. I mean, I wrote that song not about Wounded Knee or Leonard, but about Native people throughout the Americas, for the occasion of a benefit concert we were doing for the Haida people in British Columbia, who at the time, this was in the early 80s, were in a state of confrontation with the federal government in Canada over logging of their traditional lands. And we did a fundraiser for their legal fees because a whole bunch of old people were being thrown in jail for protesting. And it was quite successful. For that occasion, I realized that time I didn't really have any songs that were suitable, and my friend Hugh Marsh and I got together and wrote Stolen Land, and it just seemed to fit, and it's been part of the repertoire ever since then. I have a couple of other songs. There's a song called Indian Wars that's specifically about the southwestern U.S., but I never wrote anything exactly about Wounded Knee other than that reference in Stolen Land.
Uh-huh. Bruce Coburn is with us here on Air America Radio. Now, you've never shied away from political topics. I know one time when we spoke on the air in Los Angeles, we spoke extensively about landmines and your work to eradicate landmines from the world. A lot of your songs have an activist bent to them, and I love that you get involved, because I think it is up to artists who have a voice and a creative, talented voice at that to let their views be known.
My take on that is that all of us, no matter what we do for a living, our responsibility to basically leave our campsite better than we found it. You know, so there's an invitation out there to everyone on Earth to try to leave the Earth better than it was when they came into it. In the case of songwriters or other people with a public voice, there's a certain extra responsibility perhaps to use that. But you've got to do what's in your heart, too. I don't think that we have to make rules around that. I think an artist has to be free to do whatever the muse calls them to do. But just as human beings, I think we have that responsibility.
Bruce Coburn, you've taken basically this year off. You're doing some shows. I looked on the website, and you've got some shows in Canada. You released a live solo album this year called Slice of Life. It's a double live CD.
That's right.
And hopefully we'll see you do another tour of the States pretty soon.
I hope to, yeah. I'm looking forward to that. I think we should be recording another album sometime early in the new year. And when that comes out, of course, there'll be lots of touring.
That is Bruce Coburn, and if you're not familiar with his music, check him out. The website is Bruce Coburn, although it's spelled CoCKBURN.com, BruceCoburn.com. And he's been at this for so long. I remember hearing my first Bruce Coburn record when I was in college, so it must have been, I'm dating myself, 30 years ago, like 78, 79. Yeah, that's, I think, when Wondering Where the Lions Are came out. All right. In the next hour, we are going to change topics, bring you up to date on what happened today on Capitol Hill with healthcare, because, you know, I'm not going to let up on that fight. And there is good news. Let me just tell you this, because this happened after my conversation with Brett Budowski, who's going to be joining us in the next hour. Anthony Weiner, the congressman from New York, was supposed to put forth the amendment in the House Commerce Committee, I believe, Henry Waxman's committee, to substitute H.R. 3200 with the single-payer bill. Well, they got a promise from Nancy Pelosi that single-payer will come for a full vote in the full House when they return from the August break. So that's good. Stand by. Brett Budowski coming up next. And we'll go out with the music of Bruce Coburn. This is Wondering Where the Lions Are. All right. And more on Leonard Peltier to finish up the show at the top of the hour. Stand by. Nicole Sandler will be right back.
Nicole Sandler.
You're listening to Nicole Sandler on Air America Radio. Sandler.
You're listening to Nicole Sandler on Air America Radio.
All right. I guess I'm just too into politics these days because I hear whip it and I'm thinking, all right, there's a whip list at democracy.com. Or I'm sorry, at democrats.com. So you can call all your, all the Congress people and senators galore and, whip them into voting the right way. All right. We started the show the first hour talking about Leonard Peltier. And I mentioned that I have a friend. He is he will be a senior in high school when they go back to school in the fall. His name is Noah Gray. And he's done a lot of work. He did a documentary. He's a filmmaker. And he did a documentary called Virgin Voting during the campaign about first-time voters. Of course, he's still too young to vote, but he does some great work. And I'd have him on my radio show a lot. He is now in Washington, D.C. for the summer and working on, he's interning and doing a lot of, a lot of projects. He's working with Special Olympics also, and I'll have him on the show soon to talk about that. But he saw my post on my blog about that I was doing a whole piece on Leonard Peltier, and he called me and said, every day in front of the White House, there are these guys, and they've actually got six issues, but one of them is Leonard Peltier. And so Noah went over, he shot a piece with them, he edited it, and he sent me the audio. And I thought it would be a perfect way to end the show tonight. So here, from Noah Gray.
We're chanting for Leonard.
Meet Franco Mares and Keith McHenry.
President Obama! Free Leonard Peltier!
Both residents of Taos, New Mexico, drove 4 days for almost 2,000 miles to the nation's capital to hold a peace vigil outside the White House. As part of their vigil, Keith and Franco bake bread for world peace in a solar oven.
Solar bread!
We got solar bread, everybody!
The sun.
we petition the Honorable Barack Obama, President of the United States.
They also gather signatures for a petition they have created.
The change we need now. Support the change we need now. Universal health care, solar power, trains to every city, free Leonard Peltier.
Of all six issues, they feel that freeing Leonard Peltier is especially important.
The Native American people have been done wrong again and again and again and again. And I think it's time to stop treating the Native American people with such disrespect and such dishonor.
Not only do they rally for his freedom, but they educate the sightseers about Leonard Peltier.
Why was he in prison?
Leonard Peltier. He was arrested in 1975 for helping the Indians.
Keith and Franco have been here since July 4th, and their ultimate goal is to present their petition to President Obama by September 1st.
Because President Obama, by executive order, could release Leonard Peltier at any time. It's time to show some mercy. It's time to show some clemency. It's time to just let him go home so that he can go to the powwow with his grandchildren. It's time to put this matter to rest and let the Native American people get on with their lives and with their human rights and with their civil rights here in this country.
It's been too long. Let him go free. It's been too long.
Noah Gray, Washington, D.C.
Too long.
Good job, huh? Noah Gray, he's a really good kid. All right, and that's going to do it for the week and the month. We will kick it off all again next week. And as I said before, you know, I did the whole topic on Leonard Peltier as a listener suggestion, as was Brent Podowski, my guest, was a listener suggestion too. So head over to my blog, radioornot.com. You can contact me through there. There's email addresses, Facebook, Twitter, all that stuff. And, you know, make your suggestions as well. It's my pleasure to be here. I appreciate you staying up with me late at night. And I hope you have a wonderful, wonderful weekend. I'm going to leave you with those guys who are out in front of the White House, did a whole song on Leonard Peltier. So I will leave you with that and wish you a safe, happy weekend. Thanks for listening.
Yeah. 1, 2, 3.
Too long, too long. Leonard Peltier's been sitting in jail too long. Let him go now so he can go to the powwow. Let him go free, it's been too long. What happened at Wounded Knee? Well, it was a tragedy. He stood up for what was done to his family. Sometimes the government is wrong. That's why I wrote this song. It's time to set him free. It's been too long. Johnny Cash came in a dream last night. Said we gotta make things right. It's time to set him free. It's been too long. We stole the red man's land. Killed off most his kin. And if we had the chance, we'd probably do it all again. But America is theirs, not ours. We stole it using guns, firepower. Time to set him free. It's been too long. See, the FBI men, they shot first. It's been injustice at its worst. Couldn't be proved in court that day, but the judge said someone has to pay. And that's not the American way. It's time to set him free. It's been too long. Well, it keeps me up at night, 'cause I know it just ain't right. Let him go free. It's been too long. Tell me true, what might you do if they took everything from you? Let him go free, it's been too long. From coast to coast, from south to north, let's tell the truth for all it's worth, and let freedom's bell ring loud in the country of our birth. This song will not be over till Leonard Peltier is free. It's time to do the right thing, and it's up to you and me. There is no way to justify when justice is a great big lie. Time to set him free, it's been too long. If he dies in jail, it'd be a crying shame, and we'd all be to blame. It's time to set him free, it's been too long. In South Africa, they set Mandela free. Right here and now, it's up to you and me. We have to make our leaders see. Time to set him free. It's time to set him free. It's time to set him free. It's been too long, too long. long, too long. Leonard Peltier's been sitting in jail too long. Let him go now so he can go to the powwow with his grandchildren. Let him go free, it's been too long. Let him go free, it's been too long. Too long. It's been too long. We should let Leonard Peltier grow free.